Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne, and with me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Hello, here we
yeah,
are. We're back
we're idiots,
again.
And we didn't hit record early. So,
and you told us a wonderful story about how someone would stream video games off of a green screen pair of shorts.
Yeah,
on Twitch.
So there's probably some optimal distinctiveness theory going on with like the people who are doing it, but also like it's a way to make money. And we were having this conversation about how do we talk about novel experiences in a modern fan setting? And what I seek isn't people streaming video games on short shorts that are green screened. I actually seek out like weird niche internet informational stuff. Like I follow internet news because there is always something novel. There is always something weird and interesting and different and shocking going on the internet. The drama is never ending, and I consume it. And that's my novel experience. And yeah, so the novel experience this week, last week, I guess, or a week before, gets into the interesting world of Twitch streaming meta. And so this has like been evolving for a while. So predominantly with women streamers, and they'll sort of do something or kind of come up with this sort of way in which to like chat or engage or play games or something that's not sort of the standard Twitch experience, where you're watching someone play a game or you're watching someone do something or they're chatting with their, you know, community or any something like that. Probably the first time it got really big in the news was with the like hot tub and pool streams, where people would be like in a pool in their house, like a giant inflatable pool, and in their bathing suit, streaming to a live audience. And I heard a commentator say like how this ties into like sensation seeking and novel experience. There might even be some sensation seeking from the person doing it, which might be the sort of an interesting aside to this. But this isn't stuff that is hard to find on the internet. If you really want to watch someone in a bikini bouncing up and down, there are plenty of sites out there. If you want to watch more, if you want to see less, there are plenty of sites out there. But it's part of the idea of like, it's probably not supposed to be on Twitch or like YouTube or these other streaming platforms. And so it becomes kind of, I don't know what the right word is. It's spicy.
Titillating.
It's titillating. Yeah, that's a good word for it.
It's like a burlesque show. Like, the burlesque dancer is not going to take off all of their clothes, but they will take off most of their clothes in a way that leaves you wanting for more, but you know you can't have. And so it makes it more fun.
Yeah, and for the person involved, if they do cross that line, Twitch gives them a ban for a week or so, and then they come back and they're just as popular as ever because they get all this news. Or like their OnlyFans makes more money that week. There are definitely a number of popular Twitch streamers who kind of fall within that category, is that they don't have to make any money on Twitch. They do it because it helps their other socials and their other streaming things. But yeah, that kind of evolved the last couple of weeks with a number of streamers basically streaming the game that they're playing on a green screen, except that the green screen was a pair of tight green shorts. And then that further evolved into someone then green screening it on their bikini top while they basically stood on a device that sort of like bounced them up and down. And of course there's cameras pointed at every part that their chat or whoever's streaming and would want to see. But now Twitch has kind of cracked down on that. So you can't, you know, you can't have the stream where, like, you know, you have a camera pointing up while you're sitting on a plastic chair that's also clear. But Twitch meta is evolving, and where will it go next? I think adds to this sort of novel experience of the internet of, and it does make me think of, so I'll read Zuckerman's quote for sensation seeking, because I think that this kind of like walk the line with what Zuckerman's getting at. It's the seeking of varied, novel, complex, and intense situations and experiences, and the willingness to take physical, social, legal, and financial risks for the sake of such experience. And I would say that person who's like skirting that ban on Twitch is sensation seeking, and the person who's like dumping money to the Twitch streamer was like bouncing up and down while playing a video game. It's a fascinating world we live in, Thomas.
Truly. I would say, so the chapter distinguishes between like sensation seeking and novel, seeking novelty.
Yeah.
And I would say that like I am more of a novelty seeker than perhaps a sensation seeker. Because I remember in the chapter it kind of discussed how like for sensation seeking people, there may be like an intolerant, like a biological intolerance to boredom. Mm-hmm. Going on there where like you have to constantly like have some sort of like aggressive stimuli happening to you, otherwise you can't really deal with living. And it makes me like wonder the distinction between like, because I know we've talked about it on this podcast before, like we played fantasy with like the evolutionary roots of these things, and I'm wondering what that sensation seeking is. Like where that comes from and why some people have it more than other people do.
I don't know. Let me see if I could tap into my evolutionary psych roots.
Because I definitely like prefer homeostasis and like prefer comfort and like I'm never bored. So I don't need like aggressive stimuli like constantly bombarding me in order to function. In fact, I mean the opposite.
Yeah. No, I would argue the same. I mean, though, I definitely get the, like, need some time to, like, I can't sit in a quiet room, right? But I don't need, like, my blood pumping. I don't need to, like, listen to...
Right. You don't need to play death metal when you're trying to.
Right. I, you know, putting on just some, like, calm tunes is just as good for me. Yeah, there's probably something.
My nice stories.
There's probably something there, especially for like an adaptation that might even benefit sensation seeking, because we would maybe want, let's say, like our warriors, our hunters, to have like to not be averse to those like the thrill of the hunt or the thrill of battle, and that for that person who. And so that there would be a direct connection between that person who has that like high need to sensation seek, who is also like a really good warrior or a really like good hunter. They're going to be the ones who gain like status in the tribe, and thus they're better mates. They have better esteem. And so, they're more likely to have children if we're thinking of this from like, you know, like how our ancestors might engage with it to some degree. In a modern world, though, it's very different. And this is also different than like people prone to anxiety, because you're on the opposite end of that spectrum. Right? You definitely don't want too much. But we also have like an internet and like the algorithm almost like wants us to sensation seek. There's a benefit to like people pushing the Twitch meta. because it gets people talking about it, listening to it, checking it out, and donating on Twitch, and then some of that money goes to Amazon.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, because like it ties to, like, so sensation seeking ties to arousal seeking, and that definitely does seem to have these sort of biological underpinnings. This isn't something that is like develops over time. But maybe that moves us into the realm of, like, maybe in a modern era or a modern perspective of this, it's not biological, but it's almost like conditioned. There's like an operant conditioning aspect of arousal seeking, even if it's just the comfort of listening to someone talk, watching another video, going to sleep and having to have your favorite streamer on to listen to.
Right. In order to, like, bring your arousal levels up high enough that it actually puts you in homeostasis and comfort.
Right.
Because you're, like, at a deficit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we can go back to what we talked about with Matt Rosano, and, like, we have this lack of ritual. Like, maybe we have these lack of experiences to kind of bring us to that level of homeostasis. Maybe we're all in a deficit. We need something. And so it might not be like bungee jumping. Maybe most people don't need that, but we need like something.
I mean, and that kind of gets at the idea that we're chasing the hyper real in the absence of religion.
Yeah.
Where the internet does provide that for us. And so moving over to like novelty seeking, like, it's not so much that I'm like looking for like physiological like sensation arousal, but like I need something not mundane in my life every now and then. And it's actually kind of funny, so we're recording this episode on Easter Sunday, and I was talking to the pastor this morning because I went to Easter Sunday because I'm a good Baptist, and she was like, I heard you went to a furry convention couple weeks ago. I was like, yeah, and just like instinctively I was like, yeah, I know, it's nice to go once a year, you know, I show up, I go into, you know, drop into the looking glass for like 4 days straight, and I come back out reoriented and appreciating reality around me. And she's like, yeah, no, I think that is good. And then in my mind I'm like, well, if Christians were doing their job, they'd be creating that every Sunday, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, because really, I guess outside of like sport, maybe some movies. I mean, there are definitely movies that like horror fans probably have a little more in like the arousal and sensation seeking world. But for the vast majority, I think this is what we'll get into in the next several chapters. It's about like escape, anxiety reduction, not like bringing yourself up. So that you can enter these, so you can bring yourself up to homeostasis. Yeah, or like calming situations that revolve around your fandom. Like, you know, I mean, I'm sure I've read enough like online of like fans of The Office who like almost feel comfort in watching the show for the 100th time. And like, I can't do that. But they can watch this show and it like brings them down. It's and we'll talk about that more with escape, but it's almost like for a lot of fans, or at least for a chunk of fans, we're not even getting in the realm of sensation seeking. It's almost like sensation avoidance, with like the familiar being able to like bring you back to that level of homeostasis.
I think for me, another thing, like, because I don't particularly, I think about, like, I don't want to phrase this, in anime, I'm very picky about my animes because I need them to be weird, and they need to be super bizarre and hyper real, and, like, transport me to another world, like, I don't particularly like mundane life animes. I don't like played out, shogun warrior animes. Like, there needs to be some sort of like, ooh, this is like deeply novel, and this is the only thing like this that exists, right? Like, so
Yeah.
I'm thinking the thing that really hooked me was this. Do not recommend this show to anyone. But it's called High School of the Dead. And it's a zombie apocalypse anime, which is like meh, but it's like bizarrely hypersexualized fan service zombie apocalypse. To the like, there's a scene in it where like our like rifleman is like shooting down a zombie, right? And his like female colleague classmate is like falling backwards. And then it goes full Matrix like slow-mo, and like her breasts are like doing this number, and we get a slow-mo of like the bullet going like straight through perfectly to hit the zombie. And that was just so novel to like my 16-year-old brain that I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm not like particularly like it's not like a sexual arousal. It was like a novelty arousal where I was like, what is happening? This is so bizarre. I need to like watch the rest of this. And then that led me on my journey of bizarre animes that I watch.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that now. Like, I don't want to like listen to someone talk about anything that like I still follow current events plenty, but I don't need to watch a 3-hour video essay on like modern politics. That is just going to like, it's not novel. It's just going to bring me down. So I end up on in the weird side of the internet where I'm like watching, and I'm not going to go watch this Twitch stream. I want to watch people talk about it because I'm not going to get anything novel from the Twitch stream itself. I'm going to get something novel from someone trying to kind of put into context, why is this happening? And so you have other people on Twitch who might say like, oh no, like this, these are Twitch's rules, and this is the system that's sort of set up, and then they like restricted and loosened some of these rules up, and so these things are happening now, and that's new to me. I don't understand the legal and the terms of conditions stuff. Like I watch a lot of law stuff too, where it's like, this doesn't apply to me, but I learned something interesting about copyright, or I learned something interesting about sovereign citizen.
Right.
Yeah, and it doesn't like bring me down.
No, we speaking of like current events video essays, ContraPoints released her, I think it was like a 4-hour video of Twilight,
It
like a
that long?
Twilight
Because
retrospective.
I haven't watched it yet, because it just
We started it, we made it 5 minutes through and looked at each other and went, we don't particularly want to rehash 2010 with ContraPoints line by line through those four tomes of novel. Like, we're good. But when she started, it was always hyper novel topics that she was discussing. And so I was down to commit to the 3-hour video.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Yeah, no, I think that the last long video like that I watched was and I mean we can link both of these for anyone who does want this experience, and maybe it is novel for you. I watched the like 3 to 4 hour episode, and this was like over a period of time. It was H Bomber Guy talked about plagiarism in video essayists on YouTube, and fascinating because a lot of that was either people that I did know something about, and it was like, oh, well, turns out they're really plagiarizing all their work. Oh, that's interesting. I used to listen to this person, or I used to watch this person. But for other stuff, it was just sort of an interesting take on like discussions of why people plagiarize. Like it gets into like it does sort of border like on stuff that we have to deal with as academics. But especially in these cases where like academics were being plagiarized by video essayists on YouTube who are monetizing and making hundreds of thousands of dollars on their work, and not even giving them a name in terms of credit, and just like reading their text word for word is, it was, yeah, but like that was not like, it was novel enough. It was like, this is niche stuff. These are people I don't know about, so I'm learning about this stuff, or it is somewhat tangential. And so I made it through that. But like in that case, it was like it scratched that itch. It gave me something a little extra and informative, outside of, just like, yep, I've gone through the Twilight rabbit hole before.
Something new today.
Right.
And we've all journeyed to the center of Twilight. So
at some point, yeah.
And, you know, honestly, though, like, even though being at the furry convention is getting a little mundane and not like boring, but just normal, like, it's still so drastically different from my day to day life that I still go back. So even though I'm not like sensationally elevated through the furry convention like I used to be, it's still so much more novel than anything else I experience. Like, the other like 360 days out of the year, that I will continue to go back.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I don't dip my toes into enough fandom anymore to where if like something comes up and they're like, here's an expose on this fan culture, and I'm like, I'm gonna watch this because I know nothing about it, or I know so little about it that it's so novel. And like, the furries would be like that. I'm not a furry. And so I'm not immersed in that subculture. And so it would be hyper novel. It's novel to read and to engage with them. It's even more novel to like go to a convention and be surrounded by it for a weekend. Maybe that's where I get my sensation seeking. Like, maybe that's like, I'm not going back to the definition, I am not going to risk financial, legal, physical, social,
or relational.
Yeah.
Social? Yeah.
You know, to like join some sort of niche fan community. But I guess I already took that step. And I'm like, I'm at a university where if I go to a furry convention, they're not going to bat an eye. So I'm not risking anything.
So it is probably high on novelty seeking, but not sensation seeking.
Yeah. That's good. That's a very short chapter.
For 20 minutes.
Yeah. So, but this is a really good starting point, because I think where we'll pick up next time is getting into more specifically how we use fandom. So it's maybe not just about novel experiences. For some fans, it can be, and we do appreciate those novel experiences. But over the next couple of weeks, we'll be getting into escape, eustress, so positive stress. You know, for us non-sensation seekers, eustress is the way to go. And then, of course, we'll kind of go back to some of these sort of novelty and sensation seeking with emotion. And so, like, in a couple of weeks when we get there, Thomas, I will likely have some new Twitch drama, internet drama to sort of stir the emotional pot and allow us to enjoy fandom as observers. And on that note,
love to see it.
Yeah, we'll say goodbye.
Alrighty, goodbye.